This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch the show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. There was a time when the Ku Klux Klan was thought to be a relic of the US's racist past, but the KKK never truly went away, and in recent years, the white supremacist hate group has felt emboldened with Donald Trump in the White House. In Charlottesville, Virginia, recently, a few dozen KKK members, some of whom donned their signature white hoods, rallied out in the open, while more than 1,000 counter-protesters pushed back. Police used tear gas and arrested 23 people. Some counter-protesters said law enforcement appeared to protect the hate group at the expense of others. Well, my guest Chenjerai Kumanyika was there. He's an assistant professor in the Rutgers University Department of Journalism and Media Studies and a correspondent for our program. Welcome back to the show, Chenjerai.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So first, let's talk about why the KKK was in Charlottesville, Virginia. They were there to protest the removal of a Confederate statue?
This is correct. There's the Charlottesville City Council established a commission called the Blue Ribbon Commission to decide on a number of things related to Charlottesville history and how history is presented, memory, and so forth. And they decided to remove the Robert E. Lee statue, I believe to move it to another park, to take it down from its centrally located place in the historic district in Charlottesville. And there was also a lot of discussion of the similar statue in a different park called, it's a statue of Stonewall Jackson. So there are these Civil War, memory statues, and the Ku Klux Klan came to protest the removal of those statues. And it's really part of a longer thing that's been going on in Charlottesville this summer, which has been dubbed by some Charlottesville residents as the Summer of Hate.
Right. This is not the last time that the KKK is going to be heading to Charlottesville this summer. I understand they've got another action planned in August. So you were at this one that took place just a few days ago. What was it like? You were among the more, I understand, more than the media are saying there were about 1,000 protesters. How many would you estimate were there? What did it feel like to be there?
Yeah, it seemed somewhere between 1,000, maybe 1,500 easy protesters. They were there, and the counter-protesters to the Klan were there long before the Klan. They were there, I would say maybe 2 p.m. The Klan's permit was from 3 to 4, and I would say they maybe got there around 3:15. There were some Confederate flag people who kind of came, and, not all of them claimed to be in support of the Klan. Many of them claimed to not support the Klan, although they did show up on the same day when the Klan was coming to protest the removal of the statue. So there were a lot of, among these protesters, I spent some time with Charlottesville Black Lives Matter previous to the protest. So there was a tremendous coordination of resistant groups. Solidarity Seville was one coalition that actually issued a series of demands to the mayor and city council, connecting their, saying that they haven't done enough to deal with the Klan and the Summer of Hate and these alt-right groups, which are starting to use Charlottesville as a mobilizing location. But that was all building up to the march. When we got there, it was just, very virulent resistance to the Klan, to the idea that the Klan would be coming to Charlottesville. Charlottesville sees itself as a progressive area, and that's part of what is bubbling up under the surface, or what the tension is that there's some history there that needs to be uncovered. But Charlottesville really didn't want the Klan there. The Klan themselves, they had gotten a permit. They were clearly there to draw attention. They were there in full robes. And, it's a startling scene to see people in white KKK robes, Grand Wizard purple robes with signs declaring white supremacy, huge Confederate flags, out there in broad daylight, to think that this is 2017 and you see that. It's a spectacle that is hard to ignore.
Let's talk about the history of Charlottesville. This is a city that, as you said, presents a sort of liberal persona or a current facade, but it has a history that's irrelevant to why the KKK is there, and of course relevant to why these statues are there in the first place, right?
That's correct, yeah. There's a long history of Charlottesville that makes us, because there's a tendency to look at something like this and go, well, why can't we just ignore the Klan? This isn't related to
which
any
is what
other
the city council said people
current.
Should do. The city council said people should just ignore the group.
That's right. And they also planned a number of other events to attempt to draw people away. Hmm. But, you know, I spent a lot of time with a local scholar named Jelaine Smith, and she's also an organizer. I spent some time with Don Gathers, who was on the Blue Ribbon Commission, and as well as just many young activists and some regular people in Charlottesville. And you get a much different picture from them. And so going back to the historical element, the first thing that a lot of people don't understand is the context in which these statues went up. And again, I'm relying on what I learned from Jelaine Smith. And also there's a great article in Slate by Sophie Abramowitz that talks about how central the Klan was and all of these Confederate Klan-related groups were to Charlottesville history. In fact, the Klan was inaugurated at Monticello, the birthplace of Thomas Jefferson, in 1921 with big fanfare. And 1921 is also the time when the Jackson statue was erected. And when it was erected, it effectively displaced a black community called McKee Row, and symbolically was placed at the site of a whipping post over top of a jail, which certainly
wow.
housed a lot of black people. So that, and you know, all this with the support and fanfare of Confederate groups, Klan groups. And then the Lee statue, which is the one that is really the site of the current controversy, that one went up in 1924 under similar kinds of circumstances. So, and that was put almost, you know, Abramowitz suggests it was put as a warning sign to the nearby Vinegar Hill black community, a thriving black community, because the violence on black people at that time was often in response to the prospect of black economic success, thriving black neighborhoods. And so Vinegar Hill was also destroyed. So there's an intersecting legacy of the Klan being central to the town, black communities being destroyed, and gentrification, which, you know, if you go to that historic square now, the only remnants that you'll see mostly of black folks is people visiting and people who are homeless. In fact, there's quite a few homeless who sleep under the Robert E. Lee statue.
Yeah. Chandra, there was some report suggesting that the KKK, 50 or so people who showed up there, members of the KKK, came from North Carolina?
Yes, and so that is interesting and is important that these were not primarily Klan members from Virginia. They were from the North Carolina Loyal Knights of the KKK organization that came up from North Carolina. So that was another thing that was bothersome, I think, to people from Virginia, because it's weird. I mean, on one hand, you had protesters saying, "Don't deny the connection between the Klan and this place, Charlottesville." However, this particular Klan group is not from here. They're from North Carolina. Hmm.
Let's talk about the protesters, the counter-protesters. Before we even do that, let's actually get a sense of what they looked and sounded like. For our radio audience, we've been playing some footage that our correspondent Chandrai got while he was at the Charlottesville rally. And here is another clip, a video clip that he took of some of the chants that people were saying while they were protesting the KKK. Chandrai Komanyika, my guest, was at the Charlottesville, Virginia rally where he got this footage. Chandrai, it looks like a very multiracial group. In fact, it almost looks like there's more whites than people of color among the counter-protesters. Can you comment on that?
The solidarity across age, race, race and ethnicity, religion. Actually, there's a clergy collective. And also, gender, sexual orientation was tremendous. I mean, just a huge people. You know, the Klan as a symbolic force has a way of pulling people together in that way. But I think that the people that were protesting wanted to stress that the Klan is really the tip of the spear. It's not like we're only coming to protest the Klan. We're protesting the connection to the Klan and other things. And I just also want to stress that, Richard Spencer and those folks came, I believe, on May 13th and protested with torches. Without much fanfare, actually. I mean, local activists responded to that. And then you have this on July 8th. And then on August 12th, you have the more alt-right people coming, Richard Spencer and the alt-right group, which is different than the Klan. But then you have, in between that, you have these groups meeting informally, and there's several instances where they've been identified meeting and apparently recruiting in local areas. So these people feel like there's an actual threat of violence and safety. Activists have been doxxed and attacked online and these kinds of things as well, local activists, by these people and harassed. So there's a real danger that it's not all symbolic. There's a real concern about safety and security. And a multicultural group of people has come together to resist that.
How did the police respond? There was tear gas. 23 people were arrested. Were any Klansmen among those arrested?
I believe I may have saw one person wearing a Confederate flag taken away, but to the cheering crowd. But I don't believe any Klans people were arrested. I mean, this was one of the things that, you know, on the surface, Sonali, of course, the police are there. The Klan got a permit, so the police are there protecting, ostensibly protecting their free speech rights. But what you saw, which was strange, was the Klan seemed completely unscathed, like not a stain on any of their white hooded costumes. And they were escorted out without almost any trouble to a place where after they left, I did not see them. The police were very vigilant in restraining the crowd. But for the protesters who were protesting the Klan and protesting hate, there was SWAT teams brought out. There were two Lenco Bearcat that were painted in fatigues such that the crowd thought that they were National Guard. But I took pictures of the license plate. It said State Virginia Police. So tremendous police militarization, which provoked a crowd who was already disturbed because it seemed like the police were going to such efforts. And then long after the Klan was not visible to anyone, it seemed like more SWAT team people came out to police and sort of move protesters who were unclear as to why they had to move and why they, you know, why the police were appeared to be threatening them. So the whole time I was there, the only danger I felt, I mean, I felt the danger from the Klan, the presence of the Klan, but the most consistent danger I felt was actually from the police. And I think, we could talk about what happened, but I'll show you right here, and I got to be careful because I don't want to unleash the pepper that's still in this. But I'm holding. Can you see this?
Yes.
This is one of the canisters that was fired at protesters, and I had the presence of mind amidst coughing to pick it up.
Okay, let me just describe it for our radio audience. This is basically a large, I mean, it almost looks like a blown out soda can, but even larger than that in white, almost like a paper, how you would make a paper lantern. And so it's a tear gas canister. It's bigger
it's
than your hand.
It's a tear gas canister. And if you look inside of it, you'll see a residue. I'm very careful not to disturb
yes,
that because
please
every
don't.
Time I kick that up, it's a very potent sneeze and cough, your eyes tear up. And so that's just me holding this already used canister. I can't imagine what that was like to be fired directly at protesters who to my eyes were peaceful. I mean, I didn't see any attack. And if you look at my video footage, what you'll see is that the protesters are standing there. I mean, they're complaining. They're saying things like cops and Klan go hand in hand because it certainly appeared that way to them.
And there is a history, of course, of that we should remember.
Right. There's a history that is certainly related. So they're there and they're kind of, you know, standing there. But I didn't witness anything violent happening. And then all of a sudden, I did see one group of SWAT team members putting on their gas masks and arranging their tear gas canisters to fire. But then behind me, I just saw a tear gas thing go off. And you can see on my tape the smoke go up. And then, you know, you can see the effect that it had on the protesters, their faces, their eyes tearing up, and some people really in a state of trauma.
We will post a link to Chenjerai's Facebook videos that he took of the incidents in question on our website later today, risingupwithsonali.com. So Chenjerai, do you think that the difference in how the police treated the KKK members versus the counter-protesters had anything to do with permits, that the KKK had gotten a permit? Did the counter-protesters fail to get a permit? Would that explain in any way police actions?
It's really, the response to protesters to me is inexplicable given that I didn't feel any danger from protesters. I mean, their anger was clearly at the Klan. They did follow the police and it was clear that they wanted to know where the Klan was going. And, you know, because these people basically did want to chase the Klan out of town. I mean, and that's, and I was at a similar rally in Columbia at the State House where there was also a permit. And the crowd did the same thing there. They follow, they want to make sure that the Klan is out of town, and they don't sort of trust the police just to like escort them. And then we don't know where the Klan is, right? They want to see them.
And so there is great symbolic value in literally chasing a hate group out of your community. I mean, I think that's quite a valid goal for residents, you know, nonviolently chase them out. If you're a hate group and you're espousing white supremacist values and basically implying violence for people of color, you know, it's legitimate to request in certain ways that they get out.
And, you know, that's absolutely right. And it seems to me that at this phase, the phenomenon of police militarization is actually causing police to go backwards in their understanding. I mean, we've had Black Lives Matter, you've had all this education. And so you would ostensibly have the idea that police would be trying to forge better relationships with the community. So here you have a situation where you have protesters who, the vast majority of whom are committed to nonviolence, who are protesting the Klan, and then you confront them, first of all, with SWAT teams and militarized police. I mean, that is just so provocative. It was so provocative to see that there was a helicopter moving around, very intimidating way. And I think that you just don't get the sense that they've learned. And then ultimately, I mean, so the bottom line, Sonali, is that the Klan made it away unscathed, went home. From what I understand, they were going to attend another cross burning back in North Carolina or somewhere. And protesters were the ones who were tear gassed, and many were arrested.
And they are still burning crosses. Unbelievable that we're talking about this in 2017. Let's end with the national context of this story. I mentioned, of course, these groups have become emboldened by Trump in the White House. Under Trump's Justice Department, it's been made clear that they are going to reduce funding for investigating right-wing terrorism and are going to increase funding to examine Islamic terrorism, which has already been shown to have claimed far fewer lives in the last decade or so than the domestic terrorists that share a lot in common with the KKK. Do we have Trump to thank for the impunity that these groups feel like they enjoy?
Well, I think there's no question that these groups feel emboldened in the wake of Trump, and feel that there's a context to become more vocal. And I think that you can see that. I mean, I think, I don't know, I don't have all of the studies at my fingertips, but from what I understand, it seems like there has been a rise, certainly, in these kinds of hate, the growth of these hate groups. And you know, and then in some cases, like explicit connections. I mean, you have Steve Bannon in the White House. He's a figure in the alt-right, I think we have to say.
And the doctored video that Trump retweeted, we now know was created by a white supremacist.
Right. This was the CNN video.
And even after that was revealed, Trump didn't take it down.
So, you know, I think what's really important is there's a tendency to look at the Klan as a marginalized group who doesn't have any power. And I think that was the narrative a while back, and that we just need to ignore them and let them sort of die out. But I think what we're looking at now is that the Klan and these extremist groups represent a crucial component of the GOP base. And they actually have figures in power, some of whom are in the White House. And they are, you know, playing a role, not the only role, but they are one of the key things in stirring up a certain component of the base, setting what the order of the day is, connecting to Justice Department policies, connecting to policies when it comes to voting, and all these other things. And it's this sort of symbolism of the alt-right, and the feeling of it has gained political power and ascendancy.
Chandra, I want to thank you, as always, for joining us today. Do stay safe as you cover these very important stories. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you for having us, Sonali.
My guest is Chandrai Kumanyika, an assistant professor in the Rutgers University Department of Journalism and Media Studies. He's also a news correspondent for this show. And again, we link to his videos that he took at the Charlottesville, Virginia KKK rally and counter protest from our website, risingupwithsonali.com. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.